Proverbs chapter 2, 5 through 8. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and his mouth comes knowledge. And from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for upright. He is a shield those whose walk is blameless. For the guard the course and just and protects the way of his faithfulness once.
Good job, buddy. Open your Bibles, if you would, please, the book of Proverbs. I think y'all have already been studying the Old Testament some today. Got here for Bible class, and so if you want to back up a few hundred pages from Ezekiel and a few hundred years to Proverbs. Thank you for inviting me today. I want to say thank you for the opportunity to be here, because the opportunity to be here, here's Brother Dan's kind of down a bit. And so prayers are with you, sir, that they'll have you dancing a jig here pretty quick, okay? And that'll all get better. But it is good to see those of you that I know, and those of you that I don't, love to get to meet you. I was blessed to get to be a part of this group in a couple times in my life, and they're great folks. So I highly recommend them if you're newer to the group than I am. What would you pay for some really good advice? Some really good advice. If I could do anything I wanted to for a living, I would go around giving good advice. And I would stand up in front of people, and I would talk to them with good advice, and they would be very interested in what I would have to say, and that's how I would make a living. And you say, well, then why don't you become a teacher or a preacher or something? Well, the quantifier of that is I would give lots of advice, and I would get lots of money for doing it. Lots and lots of money. I've got a good role model to follow. Back in the... if I step over here, can y'all still hear me okay if I... So, because I might get nervous and start walking around here in a minute. A few years back, I had an opportunity to go to Boston two or three times for some courses, and a consultant there was putting on these courses, and it was $1,200 for me to go there for 2 days, and that didn't include my airfare or my hotel or anything. And it was in this big hotel, and I got to doing the math, and I was counting the seats, waiting for the course to start, and I was counting so many seats per row and so many rows back, and I counted 330 seats. And I did the math in my head, and I said, that's over $300,000 for 2 days this guy's getting. Now, they gave us sandwiches and muffins for breakfast and coffee at break, but not $300,000 worth. And I said, I want that job. I want to be able to go out and get it. And people were interested. And of course, it wasn't our money we were paying. It was the companies that we worked for that were sending us. But the reason that they were doing it was because the guy was giving good advice. And the advice that he gave were some corporate things that happened because of that. And that follow that same methodology. Texas Instruments, the little company down there in Texas, at the time was very much involved in the defense industry. And they had a problem that when a battle started, they couldn't get missiles to the battlefield fast enough where that the soldiers could shoot all the missiles up before the next ones arrived. Now, if you're flying an airplane and they're shooting at you and you run out of stuff to shoot, that's a problem, you know. So they said, we need to do something about it. So they applied this methodology and they were able to get the missiles over there faster. Fast food restaurants use this methodology, and they said, you know, the way our restaurants are organized, we've got all this kitchen space and these little booths for people to sit in. What if we redid how we cook the food and how we distribute the food and made more room for the people to sit and less room for the kitchen, because we're doing this in other places? Then we'd have more customers to come in to pay us money to cook the food and serve it to them, as opposed to just having more room to make food. Walmart took it, and they said, you know what? Said whenever somebody buys a package of Pampers and goes across that little laser thing that they got there, they said, what if instead of going to our computer, it went to Pampers' computer and said, guess what? We need another box of Pampers at this Walmart. And not only did it save a lot of babies from having to run around with dirty diapers, but it also freed up a lot of warehouse space, because Pampers, if you've ever had babies, take up a lot of room in your closet, don't they? So this people were using this, and they were willing to pay a lot of money for us to go listen to this guy talk. $1,200. What would you pay for good advice? Well, what would you pay for good advice that would help you be more happy, more content, live longer, have better relationships, get along with people more, sleep better at night, feel better during the day? Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. Blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for she is more, speaking of wisdom, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who embrace her. Those who lay hold of her will be blessed. Now we could talk about Proverbs long enough to keep us all busy until Dan's foot gets better, okay? Because there's a lot of good stuff in there. But today we're going to kind of just talk about a little piece of it. And it is that part about what does it take to have the peace, the pleasant ways. I'm going to substitute a word, security, in our lives. And what does Proverbs have to say about that? Let's talk about two non-starters, okay? Two things that it discounts right off the bat. One of the things is wickedness. Now, you'd expect that from the Bible. It says that you shouldn't be wicked. You'd expect the Bible to say that. And in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 7, it says, wicked men are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous stands firm. It's the righteous house that stands secure. And you may say, but the people I go to school with, it's not like that. The ones who are the meaner, the wickeder, the gossiper, the looser morals, the whatever, they're the ones that seem to be a little more secure and more popular than me. When I go to work, the ones who don't have the same work ethics, don't have the same... I always have problems using the word corporate immorality in the same word, so I don't know how to do that. I've been working too long. But those that don't have the same ethics that I do, those who don't give credit and share credit and share the workload that I do, they seem to have the nicer cars in the parking lot. I'm not seeing this verse in my day to day life. That's point three. This is point one. We'll get there in a minute. But the idea there is to avoid wickedness, and the righteous is what's going to... And it says that the wicked will be overthrown. The biblical reference there is, if you remember the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, very wicked places. There was a relative of Abraham there whose name was... Good. And he knew something was coming. They said, get out of Dodge, boy. This place is going. And if you may have never noticed this in the dialogue, but he says, they said, run for the hills, head for the mountains, get out of here, because this place is about to go away, and you don't want to be here when it does. And Lot says, he says, let me go to this little bitty town called Zoar, and don't overthrow it, and I'll hang out there until this is all over with. And the angel said, okay, good, go. That word for overthrow, speaking of the destruction that happened to Sodom and Gomorrah, that's the word here that God says is going to happen to the wicked. Another non-starter, money, wealth. You say, well, again, we're talking about the Bible, and again, you're preaching from the Bible, so I'd expect you to say that money's bad. No, I don't say money's bad. Money's good. I like money. Remember, my perfect job is to have lots of money giving advice, okay? As a matter of fact, I would be incorrect with the book of Proverbs if I said money is bad. Proverbs talks about working hard and avoiding sluggishness. It talks about, in the 20-some-odd chapters, it talks about how that during the winter you need to be ready for that. And so during the summer you're getting your sheep all fat and sheepy and woolly so you can cut the wool and make food. And not out of the wool, I guess you make clothes out of the wool and food out of the sheep, and basically prepare and store up by doing hard work. So Proverbs talks about that, but it says that what you don't want to do is you don't want to be that, they didn't have money in those days, that wealth to be your form of security. Proverbs chapter 18 verses 10 through 11 says, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower." And if you ever watch some of these medieval movies and such, the towers that they have to defend themselves with, the righteous run to it and are safe. So it's saying that what makes God God is a strong tower, and if as long as you're close to that and you depend on that for your security, that's where your security comes from. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagined an unscalable wall, but maybe a bit too much pretense into their wealth. So if your security doesn't come from wealth and it doesn't come from wickedness, let's talk about what it does come from. And that's what the gentleman just read here a while ago. If we could read that again, not say that I can do it as good as he did, but we'll hit it again. Proverbs chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. "Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. He gives security to those that fall in this category." Those that have wisdom, those that have knowledge, those that have understanding, those that fear God. Now, what does it mean to fear God? I give you four choices. One choice is that you're terrified. A verse that gets used a lot in gospel meetings and revivals is, "It's a terrible thing to fall in the hands of the living God." You know, so you better get up here and get wet pretty quick, because you don't want to be on the wrong side of salvation when Jesus comes back again. And it is. It is. It's a word that got used. If you remember the story of Jonah, God says, "I want you to go Nineveh, right? Go preach." No, I don't want to. I'm going to get on this boat. I'm going to go to this place called Tarshish. And a big storm came up. And if you remember the narrative, Jonah chapter 1, verse 10, it says the sailors were terrified. And they got Jonah and they said, "What did you do to make God so mad?" You know, they're that scared. That's the word terror, and the fear of God can mean that. And it can be a real motivator if you know that God has the power to do things to people that aren't doing what he wants them to. One kin to it. It can mean dread. I dread that something is going to happen. You remember the story as the children of Israel were going to go into the promised land, the book of Deuteronomy, they were dreadful. Some of them were that these were going to be great big soldiers they're going to have to fight, and their cities have big walls around them, and what are we going to do? How are we ever going to be able to take over this land? They're going to take us and our children and our wives and families captive. It's hard to believe it on a pretty day like today, but 5 months ago today, I didn't have any electricity. I didn't have any water. Some of you in Eastern Iowa, we had something called an ice storm that they've told me happens every 50 or 100 years. I hope so. I hope I'm dead when the next one comes along. Wait, Nancy and I, some of you are blessed and blessed us, but it was our 25th wedding anniversary, and we were going to go celebrate. And my Donnie, my son, who he's on his Lord willing, he's getting someplace in Illinois at the moment for a youth rally, was there with one of his buddies. And so we had, Rachel was off at Harding, so we had the kids spoken for, and we were going to go out and have dinner. And this ice storm came through, and the boys were there playing on the Xbox, and the electricity went off. I go, "Oh, this isn't going to be good." You know, and I just looked up like, what just happened? And that happens, you know, with 2 hours, 4 hours, but it always comes back on, but it didn't. And we're on a deep well out where we live, and so it's got an electric pump, and so we had no water, and we got no electricity, and we got no heat, and it's cold, and there's ice on the side of the house this thick. And that was day one. And day two. And day three. And it's just not fun coming home at night with a flashlight, you know, trying to find the key to get to the door. And it's icy, and you got to watch where you step. And the upstairs is a balmy 48 degrees because you're heating the house with the wood stove downstairs. And we're on rural electric out where we live. And our electricity didn't come on for 7 days. The people that were on Alliant, I don't know if there's any Alliant employees on here, but I'll brag on you a little bit, okay? They had theirs on in 2 days. And so my neighbors across the street are watching TV. The lights are on in their house, you know. And I'm going around with a flashlight trying to find my toothbrush. And I would go to work, and if you remember 5 months ago, there was a storm that went through, and then there was another storm. And I'd go to work, and I didn't have radio, I didn't have TV. I get to work, and the people I work with go, "Oh, what are you going to do? There's this other storm coming, it's going to be even worse than that one was," you know? And I just began to dread it, and I just got all anxious. You know, and Nancy had some wisdom. She said, "What can it do to us? We got no water, we got no electricity. There's nothing else it can do," you know? And she was right. But I dread it, and that's what this fear can mean, is it's, you know, sometimes you're dreading it and you don't want it to happen. A couple more positive things that the word can mean. It can mean respect. In the book of Leviticus, it says how that we need to respect our mothers and fathers and remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. The idea there is one of reverence for God and who He is, and because He is who He is, we need to respect Him. When Donnie, I'll pick on him since he's not here to defend himself. When he was little, we dressed him in these little Oshkosh overalls. And if he was doing something he wasn't supposed to, all we had to do was grab the back of those overalls and pick him up and set him over here where he was supposed to be. Back in June, we went to a little family get-together, and we were up in Wisconsin, and we went for a picnic, and there was this lake there, and it's kind of cold, but we decided to get in the water and splash around. We had a Frisbee, and we were playing Frisbee in the water, and Frisbee turned into game of keep away. Game of keep away turned into full contact keep away. And so we were dunking and splashing each other and everything. And so I come up behind Donnie, and I'm going to try to get the Frisbee from him. And those of you that have, you know, messed around in the water, one of the things you can do is you can come up behind somebody, you can get them behind the neck like this and force them under, right? And so I come up behind him, and I grab him like that. He's down in the water, and he's trying to throw the Frisbee to Rachel. And I say, "I'll do this, I'll do that, and, you know, then I'll get the Frisbee from him." So I get him down, I hold him down in the water, and he just stands up. And I'm just up in the air, you know, out of the water. Nothing I can do, you know. Now, does Donnie respect me? Yes. Because I can whip him anymore? No. It's just because I'm dad, you know, and that's what you do. And so there's a fear of God that we respect God for who He is. And then the last one is, it can mean awe. Wonderment, amazement that God can do what He does, and that He just keeps on doing stuff that amazes us. It's the word that got used when Solomon first became king, and the two women came with him with a problem with the baby, and one of them's baby had died. The other one was still alive. Is going, "My baby? No, it's not. It's my baby. No, it's not. It's my baby." And they're going back and forth, and Solomon comes up with this bright idea, and he says, "I know. Let's cut the baby in half. You get half, you get half, everybody's happy." Woman number one says, "Sounds like a great idea to me. I can't think of anything more fair." The true mother says, "No, you don't. That's my baby. I'd rather the other woman have it and the baby be safe than see the baby get hurt." And the people were in awe at Solomon's wisdom that he thought of that, the people that were watching this. So there's this awe of what all God can do. So when you either you're so scared of God, what He can do to you, or you respect Him for who He is, or you're in awe of what He's done, the idea is there is that you want to be what God wants you to be, and you want to go to God and do what God says. I've got a weakness for... Got one on me? I think I do. Which way is north? this way. I brought a compass with me, and I said, thank you, that's right. Or at least the compass thinks it's right. And you know what? If I was 60 miles from here back down in Benton County where I live, guess which way north would be? That way. And I like to, when I'm at a garage sale or someplace like that, or like a clearance sale, I got one yesterday. Here's another compass. It was a dollar. I said, dollar, I'll get another compass. Who knows how lost I can get. You know what? And if I open it up, guess which way it says north is? That way. When you want to go north, you're going to have to go that way. And when you want wisdom and you want understanding because you fear God, because you dread what could happen to you if you don't do what God says to, but because also you respect Him and because you're not what all He does, whenever you want this understanding and this peace and this knowledge and this wisdom, you're going to go toward God. So that's the positive side of that. And back to that very early point that we had, where we said, okay, but I do that, and I don't see that my life is that much better off than the people that don't. Okay, let's talk about that a second. I'll give you four choices of how you can think about that. It's your choice. You pick the ones that you choose. One is that because you believe in God and you respect Him, you fear Him, you're in awe of what He's done, your life is better than it would have been if you didn't. So if you live in a $60,000 house, if you aren't that way, you might be living in a $30,000 house. If you got $10,000 in the bank, if you were living that way, you might have $1,000 in the bank. Now, maybe this wicked person next to you has got $100,000 in the bank, and they live in a $200,000 house, but one way to look at it is, because of your commitment to God, He's blessed you, and you're better off than you would be. We were talking about this in Cedar Rapids, and we've got a gentleman in the audience there who's a medical doctor. And he brought up something. I guess somebody studied this, and they said people that go to church and like you and other people like you and maybe in the other churches, as a class of people, live longer, tend to be happier, tend to get along with people better than people that don't. So if they had a bunch of you or a bunch of these other people, the insurance companies would rather have you because they're not going to have to pay off as much. And this is a medical doctor that said that. So another theory is that because of that, you're going to have a better life. You've got a better opportunity to. A third choice is that if you fear God, is that your idea of life is different from somebody else's. And because you trust God, and because you're in amazement of what He can do, your life is such that you're content because you just know that you're at God's. He's going to take care of you, and whatever happens is going to be for your ultimate good. So, there's another choice. And then there's the fourth choice, which I don't think anybody could argue with, is that if you fear God, if you're in awe of Him, if you do what He says to do, this next life is going to be a whole lot better than it is for those other guys. So, which one are you going to choose? But you can fix whichever one you want to. How much would you pay for good advice? Well, good advice is only as good as it is as if you take it. I came back from that seminar, and we did one project. We saved the company $1.5 million a year. I didn't get any of it, but the company sure did get a lot better off of it. We did another project, and we took 23 days out of their billing cycle. In other words, they started getting their money from their customers 23 days faster than they were. So they were pretty happy about that. But what happens if you don't take advice? Forgive me for putting this song in your head for the rest of the day. But those of you that are old enough to remember it, and it was recently brought back by somebody, but there was a song by Brownsville Station called Smoking in the Boys' Room. Anybody remember that? Teacher, don't you fill me up with your rules, because everybody knows that smoking ain't allowed in school, okay? That had a personal thing with me, not because I smoked, because the boys' room where I went to school with was the smoker's lounge, not by decree, but it was so chosen to be. And the guys, they were quite creative that smoked. They'd go in there with their Marlboros, and the stalls were situated, you know, down one side. And then there was a door that went out of the main school hallway into there. And then there was another door right after that was one of these sort of half the stall doors. And the boys had memorized the shoes of all the teachers that would come through to check. And so if it was one of those shoes, everybody would be taking a drag, and then they would pose the what's left of the cigarette over the toilet, and if they saw those shoes, they'd go flick, flush, just that fast. Now, it was so smoky in there, you couldn't see from one side to the other, but they'd go, I'm not smoking. And it was a game. Now, the reason it was a game was because the gentlemen that were charged with enforcing this policy were Mr. Coker, Mr. McGuire, and Coach Hendricks, who were some of the youngest teachers at the school at the time. All coaches are former coaches, so they were very concerned about health. And please don't let me derail this by thinking that this is about what should you smoke or not smoke. I'll get Dr. Klein up here to talk to you. He could do a lot better job about that than I could. But it is about taking advice, and that's what the illustration is trying to talk about. These guys were the younger guys. They were the coaches, so supposedly they were about health. They were the people that the kids would look up to and hopefully respect and say, if I tell you you shouldn't smoke, you shouldn't smoke, and I'm going to try to enforce that, and such as that. But there was one small problem with that. All three of these gentlemen smoked. And we knew it as a student body because Mr. McGuire was the chemistry and physical science teacher, Coach Hendricks was the biology teacher, and Mr. Coker was the history teacher. And we all had to take those courses. And when we all had to go to their office after outside of class to turn something in or to get an assignment, they all had an office back in the back of the gymnasium. And you go back there, it's turned in, and you couldn't see it because the smoke was so thick in there. That was where they would hang out and smoke. And so it got to be a big game, which smoker could catch which smoker. And as a result, everybody smoked. About 3 or 4 years ago, I understand Coach Hendricks retired from the school system, and he had quit smoking. Mr. Coker and Mr. McGuire didn't make it. They both died of cancer before they got there. So what would you pay for good advice? Well, maybe $1,200. Maybe it's worth more than gold or rubies, but it's worth nothing if you don't take it and follow it yourself. If there's anything that the elders or the congregation can do here to help you have a more peaceful, pleasant life by fearing God, knowing what He's done for you, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.